You are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily Minnesota Timberwolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Over Twitter over the weekend. I saw some comments on Twitter that I wanted to get to from some of our loyal listeners. And we're also going to get to just a quick preview of what's happening the rest of this week. Look at the Timberwolves schedule. We also have a preview of a show that we're going to do, something a little different that we'd like to try out that we think is going to be pretty fun. All that coming up. But first, let's talk about this Wizards game, Trey. This was pretty rough, to say the least. Shot 14% from three-point range. The Timberwolves did. They ended up with only one player, Karl-Anthony Towns, topping the 20-point mark, and they lose this game by double digits, a 14-point loss, 135-121 on the road. They just cannot seem to shake these road losses here over the last week or so. Timberwolves in a tough place. Is it officially tank mode, Trey?
Well, it's rough, right? We have 18 games left in the regular season. We're 5.5 games back of the 8th seed Spurs, 6 games back of the 7th seed Los Angeles Clippers. At this point, I just would rather be in front of the Lakers, I guess, if we're going to keep fighting for the playoffs. But it does feel a little bit like tank mode, Colton. And even before that Wizards loss, just these other two losses in these away games, Atlanta, Indiana, just the way that they happened. Going from Atlanta in the overtime game, you know, just kind of not doing anything in overtime, not stepping up when some guys needed to. And then against Indiana, just letting Bogdanović look like Kevin Durant out there. And against the Washington Wizards, the Timberwolves looked like they were playing a team that was 13 players deep, and that's just not true about the Wizards. Even though they have some nice individual pieces now that they've traded out of order, it really is too bad. But Colton, it does feel like tank mode a little bit. It does.
I think at this point you just have to bite the bullet and take the dive. I don't know. I mean, they're sitting at 29-34 after this loss. You really have played the easiest part of your schedule. We talked about this going into this week with the Hawks, the Pacers without Victor Oladipo, and the Wizards. Now you're going to start playing the really tough teams, and you're sitting there. You're behind the Lakers at 30-33. You're behind the Kings at 31-31. And you were a far cry from the San Antonio Spurs, who are locked in at the AC right now at 35-29. Clippers in the seventh spot at 36-29. Excuse me. So really, if you're trying to gain any headway against teams like the Lakers, who are a game and a half or whatever up on the Timberwolves, and the Kings, who are a couple games up on the Timberwolves, you've really lost out on the best part of your schedule to do this. I will say this. The one hope that the Timberwolves faithful can have, the one solace that you might be able to take away before we head into the tougher part of the schedule is, here, I was thinking about this last night. This is the perfect comparison for the Timberwolves. The Timberwolves this year are what the Denver Broncos were in the NFL this year. Really good against 500 teams, the team you expect them to be against 500 or better teams, terrible against sub-500 teams. The Timberwolves, in the last 6 games they've played against sub-500 teams, they are 1-5 against sub-500 teams in the last 6. They're terrible against sub-500 teams, and they're never going to be the great teams. They're never going to be the Warriors. They're never going to be the Raptors or the Bucks. But they're pretty good against teams. They come out to play against teams like Denver or Oklahoma or Houston. They come out and play against these teams. This is the Denver Broncos of the NBA.
Just because I'm not going to be too familiar with this analogy and only watched the Super Bowl, which is pretty terrible, and didn't watch the playoffs. Did the Denver Broncos make the playoffs?
Nope.
Okay, perfect. I was wondering where that was going, and I was like, oh, maybe the Denver Broncos made it as a wild card. And I was like, let me look this up. I can't find it. Nope. All right.
I'm not saying that they're going to make the playoffs. I'm just saying that maybe they'll make these games interesting going into this tough part of the schedule.
Okay. Fair enough. Well, I do think there's a possibility. And here's the thing. When I say that maybe we should go in tank mode, I'm saying maybe this team will go in tank mode. I don't necessarily enjoy tanking mode. And to any listener who gets annoyed with people saying why not tank when there's like guys like Zion Williamson, because I don't know if you've looked at the standings, but the teams that are in the bottom 5-6 of the league are really atrocious, and they're not going to be moved out of those spots. Minnesota could lose the next 18-19 games and still not be in the top three teams to get Zion Williamson. You're really just vying for like a 6-10 pick, which is great. But the draft really isn't fantastic this year outside of the top five players. And then if you look at the rest of the teams on this schedule for Minnesota, it's really going to be difficult for them to win games. But again, I just don't think fighting for a draft pick that's five spots higher and just taking the L when you have such young players like Andrew Wiggins, Karl Anthony Towns, Tyus Jones, Josh Okogie, etc., that don't really need to be involved in a losing culture this early in their careers, especially after making the playoffs, and that was such a huge story for the first time in 14 years for Minnesota. I just don't think it's a good idea to start selling that to your players. So while I say tanking is probably the next thing to do, that's just not really my own opinion on it, but my opinion, I don't think is popular with fans though. So, but we do have some really tough teams on the way after this Wizards game. So it's going to be really difficult, Colton.
Well, and there is a point to be made about the value of tanking, but that kind of has something to do with some Twitter stuff. So I want to get to a break for some sponsors and let's dive into some of the Twitter comments and questions we had from over the weekend. First, some sponsors: Colt Molesky, Trey Flynn. There wasn't tons to talk about from this Timberwolves game. They were really bad at protecting from turnovers and points off of turnovers. They sent the Wizards to the line a lot. They did not play offensively well. It took them almost an entire half to get to three-point shooting. There's not a lot to say. This was a really badly played game against a team they should have beat. What I did want to talk about was going off of what we were saying about tanking. We had a couple of questions. Jake Dewey asked about, would you rather get rid of Teague or Wiggins? You had Alan, who is always reaching out on Twitter. Appreciate him always contacting and talking with us. He was talking about what is the positive outlook for the rest of this season. You had Adam on Twitter saying that the Timberwolves are in full tank mode and they just don't realize it yet. And it made me think, what is the positive to tanking? Because everybody seems to believe that this is going to be a really thin draft, right? That this is going to be about a draft that goes about maybe eight slots deep. And obviously, you're probably going to find a gem here in the 20 spot range or at the beginning of the second round. There's always that one gem that sticks out. But that's like nine guys in a pretty big draft. So that's not a ton of success rate for everyone else. So I was thinking, what teams would really be interested in the Timberwolves pick? Well, if you're looking at maybe getting rid of maybe like a Teague contract or a Gorgie contract, I don't think it would work for Wiggins because his is just too big. But if you're trying to offload a contract like Gorgie's, offering a team like Atlanta, who really would be interested in that pick because they could package that pick with the Mavericks pick and try and move up in those top eight slots in the draft, offering them a pick and maybe like a young player like Kita-Bay's job and then Gorgie's contract to offload Gorgie's contract for those two pieces. If you can just get that pick in like the 15-14 range and you still don't think there's going to be any real value you're going to get from that, maybe it's not a terrible idea to offload that pick to get rid of Gorgie's contract and try and make some space, because there are some interesting second tier free agents in this summer for free agency that you could get if you have enough cap space. And getting rid of Gorgie's contract would give them some wiggle room.
Yeah, completely agree. And in terms of tanking, like I said, I don't think Minnesota's really going to sell that to their players. So I do think they're going to finish with, let's say, the 13th or 14th pick or even 12th pick. Which I believe the 12th pick in the draft was Shai Gilgeous-Alexander for the Los Angeles Clippers this past draft. I could be wrong about that, but that isn't the type of player that we're looking at getting. There is no way there is a Shai that's going to come that late at the 12th. There is definitely gems, how you're saying, like in the past couple drafts, you've seen Donovan Mitchell, guys like that get drafted very low, John Collins. And that is amazing for those teams that did find those gems. It's just very rare, and you cannot bet on it. So in terms of what this team should do with the draft pick, I totally agree, Colin. And I was going to bring it up too, so I'm glad we're on the same note here. Trading that pick to get rid of Jeff Teague, who probably is going to opt into his player option, more than likely.
Why wouldn't he?
Yeah, why wouldn't you just take that 19 mil to dribble a basketball? And then Gorgui Dieng, who will be making, $33 million over the next two seasons. To get rid of one of those contracts with the first-round pick, I would do that immediately if I'm the GM, if I'm Layden. And I know that doesn't seem like the sexiest thing to do if you're a listener, but believe me, getting rid of that cap is big for this organization in the front office. First of all, they don't want to go into the tax. They do sign other players this summer. If they do re-sign other players, like they want to extend Tyus Jones to a longer contract if they don't offer him his smaller one. And then you do have other players you have to think about bringing back. Are you going to bring back Derrick Rose? Are you going to bring back Luol Deng? Is Anthony Tolliver going to come back? Is Jared Bayless going to come back? Is Taj Gibson going to come back? These are all players that are most likely going to be free agents. The only one that'll probably stay is Tyus Jones because he'll get his qualifying offer. So you're going to need money, and you already have some player, a rookie that looks really good this season, Josh Kogi. You played Keita Bates-Diop. Good amount of minutes against Washington, and we haven't talked about it yet, Colin, but he actually looks like a pretty good player off the bench. Like, I've had no problems with him. Obviously, he's a little rusty, but the 23-year-old swingman looked good, and he's the kind of guy you give minutes to in the last 18 games of the season if we do intend on tanking. But, you know, stick with those two guys. Trade that draft pick if you can and try to get rid of Teague or Jang. But just realize, too, the Timberwolves need to at least get, like, a second out of that, because losing a first-round pick, while many people don't think that's too big of a deal for getting rid of Teague or Jang, those first-round picks have a lot of value. But what might have more value is cap space, so it's going to be really tough to sell it.
I was just thinking about this over, especially yesterday watching that game, but over the last couple of days with some people asking whether we would rather have Teague or Wiggins, I talked to some friends who was wondering, they were wondering if there was any way out of the Wiggins deal because they're so desperate to get away from it. Is John Wall still the worst contract in the NBA, or is Wiggins trying to force him out? Because at this point in the season two, outside of his rookie year, he's averaging his worst points per game just through a season, and he's shooting almost as many times as he did in the 16-17 season when he averaged his highest points per game.
No, I'll still say John Wall is the worst contract in the NBA, and I would say Andrew Wiggins is probably second or third. It also depends on worst in what way, like what specific way for the organization. For example, like, even though John Wall's injury is terrible this year and how much money they're paying him, they've seen a lot of potential in other guys, whether it's Bradley Beal, Jabari Parker, Bobby Portis, players like that, Thomas, the center. And so they found pretty good cases in other guys. For Minnesota, you don't want Andrew Wiggins not playing because he's only 24 years old. He still has a lot of potential to be a really solid player in this league. I know that's overset a lot, and I don't think he's going to be an all-star, but he has potential to be a consistent role player or starter in this league, and a solid bona fide starter. Not just, you don't necessarily have to be an all-star to be a good starter. And so I think, you know, saying he's the worst contract in the NBA is probably a little too early. Wait till he gets to his prime age around 27 to really determine whether he's a bust or not, in the sense where a bust for that contract, even though it seems like he's on that trajectory, that downtrend. But it's an interesting question. If I'd rather have or get rid of Jeff Teague or Andrew Wiggins, I would rather get rid of Wiggins, and I just don't think it's possible unless he comes back with a solid season where his trade value increases. And I don't know how you feel about it, but if his trade value does increase and he comes back next season averaging like 18 points a game, he's shooting like 45% from the field, 35% from three. Like, do you trade him then? Like, if we have a consistent version of Wiggins next season that's efficient and he's pretty effective on the starting lineup, do we go, okay, good, that sounds good, we can win with that. Karl-Anthony Towns is a monster, he can win with that. Or do we go, okay, let's trick the rest of the league and let's get off this contract? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, here's the thing is, it doesn't really matter what my thoughts are, right? Because if you have a first pick from the NBA draft doing that, it's going to be easier to pull teeth than for the front office to get rid of him, right? Because Here's the thing is that we know this from every sport is teams do not like to bail on first round picks, especially number one picks. That's why the Markelle Fultz trade was so crazy. Isn't because of the return on him. It's because that a team was actually willing to get rid of the number one pick so fast. And that just doesn't happen. That just doesn't happen where a team is willing to sell. It usually, even if it's a mistake, it usually takes years and years and years for a team to really turn around and say, all right, we admit that this was a bad idea on a number one pick, especially after you give them max money. There's just a certain dedication, a certain just defiance to be that wrong from a team that will give up on a number one pick. And so if I'm looking at it, I would sell on him. And you can't sell on him right now because you would be paying so many assets to have a team take him in that contract. But the thing of it is that either way, it's probably never going to happen because there's no way a front office is going to backtrack on a mistake after it looks like he's coming around.
Let me ask you something real quick. Would you rather have, and I saw this on Twitter, and it wasn't directed toward us, but I think it was just a general question. Would you rather have Gordon Hayward or Andrew Wiggins right now? It's tough.
I think I would rather have Gordon Hayward just because Gordon Hayward's decline makes sense. Like if you look at what it took for a player, and I'm not saying Gordon Hayward is as good as Paul George, but Paul George took like 2.5-3 years to get back on track after his leg injury. And while his was more brutal, it was the same kind of deal where you're going up to make a play, a standard NBA play, and you come down and your feet just aren't there and you end up with a horrific break. That takes years of mental confidence to build that back because that's just something where you're thinking about it when you're not supposed to be thinking about routine plays every single time. And so when Gordon Hayward has bad games or bad runs, it makes sense. It makes sense. It's going to take a lot of not only just rehab and just getting back into the rhythm of game, but it's also probably going to take some sports psychology to get him back mentally for every NBA game to where he was before. And that makes sense. It doesn't really make sense what's happening with Wiggins and his steady decline. And that's what's so concerning about Wiggins versus Gordon Hayward. Like, for Gordon Hayward, I really feel like there's a light at the end of the tunnel. Like, it might take longer than people want it to, but in the next 2 years, 3 years, I really believe he's going to be where he was with that final season when he was with Utah, where he was the 26 and 8 kind of guy where you could really depend on him and his three-point shot, but he could also crash the boards. And so I think that with Gordon Hayward, you're going to see him come back around. It's just an unfortunate circumstance that his entire ankle exploded when he landed on the ground against the Cavaliers over a year ago. But that at least makes sense. This doesn't.
Yeah, I agree. I think the Andrew Wiggins thing is such an outlier because he goes from, you know, shooting pretty good numbers 2 or 3 years ago, averaging 22, 23 points a game, to now barely averaging 15, 16 points a game, shooting under 40%, under 30% from three, 60% from the free throw line. Like, terrible, terrible numbers that show that he should be trying to get more work in, off the bench or on the G League rather than the starting lineup. And that's not hyperbolic. He's really just been that inefficient this season where it looks like he's doing – it's not the Markelle Fultz situation by a long shot, but it does feel like that a little bit. So kind of going off what you said as an example to that point with the number one pick, it feels like we're doing Andrew Wiggins a disservice by playing him as many minutes as he's getting and also by playing him or giving him the amount of freedom that he has on the offensive end. And I'm saying this while he's coming off from an okay game against the Washington Wizards. But his numbers are just too inconsistent for me to say anything else about that. But, yeah, ultimately, I agree with you. I would rather take Gordon Hayward, and it is the contract, unfortunately. It is what it is, and we just kind of have to stick with it. And I think the bench Wiggins thing might be an idea for the remainder of the season, what we've already talked about.
We're going to get to what the rest of the week looks like for the Timberwolves, but first, some sponsors. Trey Flynn, Colt Molesky. We have hit up the Twitter questions, the Twitter comments. Again, I want to thank all the fans for reaching out to the Locked On Wolves account at Locked On T-Wolves. Also, reach out to Trey Flynn NBA and at C Molesky. We always love communicating with the fans and with the listeners and with other Tortured Timberwolves faithful. So make sure you're reaching out on Twitter. We will always at least hit you back on Twitter, but usually we're giving shout-outs to you on this show. So thank you so much for reaching out. Really appreciate it. Now, what the rest of the week looks like, the Timberwolves play the Thunder on Tuesday at home. Then they're on the road to Detroit before playing the Wizards on Saturday. That's a home game on Saturday after a quick break. It feels like there's this weird thing in the Timberwolves schedule lately where they're playing a few back-to-backs and then they'll have like a 2-3 game stretch where it's open and you're just like, why couldn't we just have a day in between games and then play? But whatever. I'm not making the schedule. And then on Sunday in another back-to-back, Saturday they play at home against the Wizards, and then on Sunday they're at home against the Knicks. So that's what the next 7-odd days of basketball look like for the Timberwolves. We are also, just a preview, a heads up, we're also going to be recording live during the fourth quarter of the Thunder game. We haven't done a live show during any of these games, and so we wanted to give it a shot, see how it goes. So that will be coming out, what is that, Wednesday morning that will be coming out, or we might release it Tuesday night. We're not sure. We'll figure that out still. We'll still have a show tomorrow morning, so we'll give you more information on that, but be on the lookout for that. That's going to be a pretty cool show. We're excited about that. But, Trey, if you're looking at this slate of games over the next week, what is the first thing that jumps out to you looking at these opponents?
The first two games this week, Tuesday and Wednesday, Oklahoma City Thunder and then Detroit Pistons. Oddly enough, the Thunder are playing like the Pistons, and the Pistons are playing like the Thunder right now, which is just weird. But we're playing at home against the Oklahoma City Thunder, who are 5-5 in their past 10 games. Paul George and Russell Westbrook have been phenomenal. Russell Westbrook essentially won the game for the Thunder last night against the Memphis Grizzlies, scoring like 6 points in the last minute. And then we're playing at Detroit on Wednesday against a Pistons team that has desperately wanted to make the playoffs for a very long time. Blake Griffin is playing like an MVP. He's probably my fifth vote for MVP, the fifth person to be an MVP this season. He's single-handedly leading this Pistons team to the playoffs. I did not see this coming from a guy that I was kind of low on coming out of L.A. So I'm happy to see that he's killing it there and that they're a pretty well-rounded basketball team that's pretty gritty, and I like their style of game. And, you know, their coaching staff, it's blanking on me. What was the Raptors head coach name? Dwayne Casey. Dwayne Casey's first year with Detroit after winning Coach of the Year for Toronto. He's done a fantastic job with them. So they're 8-2 in their past 10 games. That's going to be the toughest game out of both those games, which is really weird to say. The home game against the Thunder, for some reason, Wiggins owns the Thunder, so you can expect a Wiggins game potentially. And then for Detroit, that at-Detroit game is going to be a little insane because those fans are just loving that. They don't have a lot to love there, and so when they see the Pistons about to make the playoffs, I'm sure that's going to be a packed game. So I'm nervous for both of these outings, mostly because they're both playoff teams, and Minnesota currently is not and doesn't look like one after three losses in a row. So this OKC game first on Wednesday is going to be rough because we're playing two MVP-like players right now.
I actually think this is going to sound crazy because not only do I love the Thunder, this has been well recorded. I have thought for some time the Thunder are the second best team in the West right now over the Nuggets, over the Rockets. I think they have the best shot of anybody to take out the Warriors this year. I like this team a lot. I really love Paul George. Really love Nerlens Noel since Kentucky. And so this is going to sound weird to say, but I think that the only win the Timberwolves get this week is against the Thunder, actually. Listen to this quickly. Obviously, Wiggins has great games. He's the mayor of OKC. It's the only game games he cares about. The few games that they play, the Thunder, he's circled on the calendar because those are the games that he's got to wake up for and come out of the coma. But if you get a Wiggins-type game against him, with the way Towns is playing, this is going to be a win. Over the last 10 games, Towns is averaging 31.1 points, and he's averaging only 18.6 field goal attempts, shooting 63% from the field, 52% from three, 75% from free throw range. And he's roping in 13 rebounds, averaging over 4.3 assists and 1.1 blocks. This is another one of those sneaky dominant runs from Towns where the team is doing really bad in a certain chunk of games, and so it kind of goes unnoticed a little bit, or it doesn't get the recognition it should. But Towns is doing a crazy amount on less than 19 shots per game, and he's doing it really efficiently, and he's also all over the floor. He's grabbing a ton of rebounds. He's averaging almost 4 offensive rebounds per game. He's grabbing assists. He's blocking all over the place, and he's putting up over 30 points per game. If the Towns run continues into this game and you get like a 35-point night from Wiggins, I think you can send the Thunder reeling.
Yeah, agreed. And I actually agree with you that the Oklahoma State Thunder are probably the team that can beat the Golden State Warriors. And really, my only reasoning for that is that Russell Westbrook and Paul George hate the Warriors. And I know like every team like and players hate the Warriors. But there is also some kind of type of respect for each individual player on that team. For Russ and Paul George, like, they just literally look like they don't like anybody on that team. And Kevin Durant specifically, obviously the Russell Westbrook stuff, has been overdone and oversaid, but there's obviously something there. And that series, if it can be one, will be probably the most watched series in the past few years that isn't the finals. So I'm really excited to see that. But in terms of this game, I do think Minnesota is going to win against the Thunder. And I do think they're going to lose against Detroit. I'm not too sure about Washington in New York. But in terms of why they're going to win against the Thunder, not just Andrew Wiggins, kind of going off your point, Karl-Anthony Towns is playing amazing. And if you haven't been keeping up with those numbers, those are great ones by Colton. But also, he's making $150 million over the next 4 to 5 years. And if he ends up getting an all-NBA third-team center position this season, he'll be making up to $190 million. In his contract, and that's guaranteed an extra $35, $40 million added onto that with an all-NBA selection. That's just how the contracts work out. And this is the only season that can happen, that he can get that extension after signing it. So he's not only fighting, because it looks like Towns is fighting for a playoff spot. He's not only fighting for a playoff spot, but he's fighting for more money than I will make in my entire life. Just for that small extension. So he's got a lot on the line, and so he's going to keep putting up these ridiculous numbers to try to win basketball games, but also to try to get the extra $40 million, which is huge.
He's playing for the amount of money that I'll probably lose over my life sports gambling is what he's doing. But we're not going to talk about that. Definitely the Thunder game will be the best game for the Timberwolves. I also think they just match up really poorly. I don't think that they can match the talent in just the front court, and their back court isn't good enough offensively and defensively on both sides to really hurt the Detroit Pistons from the back court. And then against the Wizards are really confident against the Timberwolves, and the Wizards, you see stuff from Bradley Beal. Bradley Beal still wants to make the playoffs. And so you have a bunch of forwards, just a really deep wing-like team against the Timberwolves. You saw how that went the other night. And then the Knicks. I think that it would be the most Knicks thing ever to beat the Timberwolves when they're trying to play for losses. And when the Timberwolves are still, for some reason, trying to play for wins, the Timberwolves end up losing. I think that would be the most Knicks thing that could happen over the weekend, and I see that going down. So it's not exactly maybe the most positive thing, but I'm just being honest. I think the Timberwolves over the next was at 4 games. They go 1-3, and they end up beating their best opponent of the week. And that's just the way this season is going.
Yeah, I definitely think that might be what happens, unfortunately. Maybe it's just a morale win against the Thunder, just kind of an exciting game. And at least we might get a live pod out of that in the fourth quarter, which would be nice. But, and I won't go too far into the tangent here. I just wanted to bring it up as a quick side note. But the three games after this four-game stretch that Colton's talking about with the Thunder, Pistons, Wizards, Knicks, the three games after are three away games again that we could go 0-3 on potentially again, which will be our fifth time this season if we do that on a three-game road trip. But it's the Denver Nuggets, Utah Jazz, and Houston Rockets, which is ridiculous. Playing at Denver, at Utah, and at Houston, three playoff teams that are feeling themselves right now. And then we go home for one game after that against the Golden State Warriors. So, like, when we say that we don't necessarily like tanking or want to tank, I'm also saying that realizing that we will, like, accidentally tank the last 18 games of the season. Like, we're gonna really hit a downtrend. And if we lose games against the Washington Wizards and New York Knicks going into those away games against Denver, Utah, Houston, Golden State, you might actually see a losing streak, a really serious losing streak for Minnesota, because they're already on a three-game one right now. If they lose again to OKC, you could potentially see what Colton's saying, lose to Detroit, lose to Washington, New York, Denver, Utah, Houston, Golden State. It could get bad, so they absolutely need to step up against the Thunder on Tuesday night.
Well, that's what we're talking about. In this last week was that they were playing two teams outside of the playoffs and a team in the playoffs that was without their superstar in Victor Oladipo, and those were the wins because now in the next eight games you're playing six playoff teams, and a bunch of those teams, like OKC, the Warriors, the Denver Nuggets, those teams are in the top three of their respective conference as far as playoff seeding. So the schedule is about to get really, really tough. And a lot of these games are, like you mentioned, are road games. I mean, they're playing Denver, they're playing Houston, they're playing Utah, they're playing Detroit. Those are all road games. And so this is going to get pretty ugly pretty fast for the Timberwolves. And, again, the solace that you're going to have to grab is stuff like Towns playing really well. It's stuff like, oh, Wiggins plays really well against OKC. Oh, Covington is coming back. That's the stuff you're going to have to get positive about, because I really think it's possible that you could see them go on like an 11-game skid here if they don't beat OKC. I really think that's possible. And that's gross and that's no fun, but I'm sorry, that's the reality. And I'm just trying to give you the objective my objective opinion from stuff that I'm seeing in the trajectory that this team is laying out for itself. So that's what we have to look forward to, Trey.
Yeah. On a positive note, you know, if a skid does happen, you know, listeners, you get what you want. You get probably a top 10 pick in the draft, and we get to start, me and Colton get to start analyzing the hell out of these these prospects and trying to figure out who the best option for Minnesota is. So if we win, we win, and we can hope that we can get on a good streak and then hope we can get past these teams that are above us in the 12th to 8th spot. And if we lose the next couple games, then you can hope that we'll get like an 8th or 9th or 7th pick in the draft and get a player that's a little bit better than a Josh Okogie or Kade Bates-Diop, which is a possibility. So there's definitely hope to have in this season. Either way, you're going to see something positive for next season for Minnesota, I believe. If they make the playoffs, fantastic for the culture. If they get another first-round pick, it's an asset to trade other guys, or it's a player you bring in that's young and that's ready to ball. So don't be too down on this team right now. Just realize what we've been dealing with all season long and injuries, and understand either way we can fight for the playoffs or we can get a high draft pick. It is what it is.
It is what it is. Hashtag the culture, hashtag bench weight. That's what we got for you guys. We'll be back bright and early tomorrow morning. Thank you, as always, for listening to us.
You are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily Minnesota Timberwolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.